place for where we were. Where were we when we let off last week? What's going on? Well, actually, we're a little bit before that. But basically, we stopped at 33:10. And basically, Esau and Jacob have finally met. Jacob had left the country that he was living in because his brother wanted to kill him. He stayed away for 20 years, basically in an imposed slavery to get his wives and to get his flocks and all the stuff that he had. And he kind of burned his bridges back that way, and he's coming back. And he doesn't know how Esau's going to take and receive him back in, because we got to realize that when he left, they weren't on the best of company together. You know, Esau said, as soon as dad dies, I'm going to kill you because you done stolen everything that should have been mine. So when he comes back in, there has been no correspondence. They haven't been like calling on the telephone weekly and building a relationship up, okay? Cell phones haven't been invented just yet. So back in these days, you had to meet face to face. So he comes in, he devises his plan as he comes back. But let me tell you, when he comes back, he has a very intimate meeting with God on the way back. And we see, in a way, how it has changed. I think this trip back made God real to Jacob, which will now formally go forward known as Israel. There was a night when he wrestled with God back and forth, and he held on to God so tightly, and that wasn't his thing. He always, before then, who was God to him? Before then, it was the God of my grandfather or the God of my father, but it wasn't intimately held as my God. And we see a change happening right here. So in 33:10, it goes on to say, and it says, Jacob says, nay. Good morning. You go home and take care of that man.
But I wanted to tell you, I'm not walking out on you.
You can walk out, darling.
Now, and here's a note.
If you walk out, you're not missing much.
I'll give this to Mike.
Okay, give that to Mike. Good morning, darling.
We have a couple of questions for you after
church. Okay. You have not a problem. It's about a T-100 or a Prius.
The T-100.
Yeah.
And I have some really heavy bags of mulch.
Yeah.
Which I bought.
I'll give it to them when you get done.
But, we can hopefully a couple people.
I'll do it when you get done.
Really heavy.
We're good. It's one thing God gave me was muscles.
Yes.
Okay. So, we have Jacob say, at this particular time, he had already left, he had already gotten, he already met up with his brother, and he devised a plan where he was going to send the weakest of his family out first. Or actually, he stepped out first, bowed his head 7 times. His family followed suit. And he didn't get the reaction from his brother he thought he was going to, did he? His brother grabbed him and hugged him and wept because his brother had returned. And he had said to him, what is the meaning of all these doggone, all these sheep and all these animals coming toward me? What was the meaning of all this, brother? And I think he probably knew what it was mean, but he's like, I just wanted to sate your anger a little bit. And then in 33 it says, Jacob says, nay. And he's going to like, keep your stuff, I don't need your stuff. That's what basically is leading up to this. And Jacob says, nay, I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand. For therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou was pleased with me. When I got to that last week, I'm like, I got to talk a little bit more about this. Because it's like, what is he trying to say here? What is the meaning behind this whole verse? Come on, somebody. Let's have a discussion about this. When he says to Jacob, let's just break it down. He says, Jacob says, nay, I pray thee. Now, if I have found grace in thy sight, receive my present at my hand. And is he, what does he say? And he's like, if I have pleased you in any way, if it has pleased you to see me and the way that I have presented myself to you in any way, please take the gift I want to give to you. If any way I have pleased you, please accept my gift. But then he goes on to say, for therefore I have seen thy face, so I've looked upon your face. He says, and it's though, when I look upon your face, it's almost as I have seen the face of God. And thou was pleased with me. In other, so what is he trying to say here? Well, this is, he's seen the face of Esau, and when he looks upon Esau's face, he says, it's as though I have seen the face of God, and thou was pleased with me.
Esau's the imager that God intended. But forgiveness, it realizes, those that have God's
okay. Anybody? Yeah, I'm not saying anything. But he says, if I have seen my face, and it was as though, it's almost like I have seen the face of God. Understand, this is the way, and I've read some stuff on it, but this is the way it kind of takes. What has been Jacob's mindset this whole time? He gets there and he sees something that he has totally different than what he thought was going to happen. What has God promised him the whole time? God was going to lay the foundation for him. God was going to grease the ways for him. God was going to see him through in what he did. Not because of who he was and what he did, but because God chose to work through this man. Prophesized about it early on. Right? God made this choice that he was going to work through this man. And now he sees God's working. So when he comes and he sees his brother, and his brother meets him with grace and humility and love, it's as though I see the whole face of God working throughout all this situation.
So this is an answer to prayer for him. That's equally.
Yeah. And you see the relationship developing, do you not? Between him and God. He sees God protecting him. And that's a different sort of Jacob than we saw the whole time, has it not been? It says, take, I pray, and in the 11, it says, take, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to me, because God hath dealt with me graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. In other words, he says, please take what I'm going to give you. It says, please take thee the blessings that is brought unto thee. In other words, please take the stuff I brought to you. Why? Because, not because I have done all this. He says, because God has dealt graciously with me. You see a difference in the way he's looking at the world at this particular time. He's making a change in the way he looks at things. Before it'd be like, well, you know, all the stuff, look how much I did back in thing. It's all about me. Now it's changed to something else. God has dealt gracious to me. He's given God the glory and not taking it for Jacob anymore. God has dealt gracious to me because I have enough. And he urged him and he took it. He's like, I don't need this. I have plenty. God has dealt gracious. Please take my offering. I'm going to give to you. And he took it. And he said, this is Esau. And he said, let us take our journey and let us go, and I will go before thee. In other words, brother, let us go together. Let us take a journey back home. Come and see. Come to where I am. I have all these men. Nobody's going to mess with you. Take a journey with me and let us go on this journey together, and I will go before thee. He's like, I will go prepare the way for you. Well, I think Jacob already understands that he's got somebody else preparing the way a lot better than what his brother can do. Again, I see Jacob growing in the grace and knowledge of God through all that time. Yes, Coach. I'm going to go to Seer. But, yeah. Well, I'm just saying, this is, I haven't got to that yet, but I'm just saying, this is what his brother is saying to him. And he said unto him, my Lord knoweth. And so he starts making some excuses, but they're valid excuses. He says, but my Lord, he said to him, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender and the flocks and herds are young with me. And if men should overdrive one day, all the flocks will die. In other words, I've got all these weak women and children with me, and I've got all these youngling animals, and I don't want to hold you back. You would have to go much slower if you went with me and all these weak possessions I have. And if we went at a pace which you should be going, the animals would die and the children would be injured and stuff. He says, so let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly according as the cattle goeth before me, and the children are able to endure, until I come unto my Lord in Seir. Personally, like Coach said, I don't think he ever intended to go to Seir. I don't think God was leading him in that direction. I don't think God wants his people amongst the Edomites. They are a called out people, and that's what he wants them to be. But he takes it, he does it really diplomatically, right? Was he this diplomatic when he was stealing his stuff? No, he was a conniver back then. You see a change in the way the man has done. His future is in wherever God leads him. And it's not in Edom. You're right, Coach. So what was Esau's response? Esau said, okay, I can do that, but let me leave some folks that are with me. In other words, let me leave some folks here to protect you, because I'm a big man around here, and if I leave my folks with you, ain't nobody going to mess with you. See, you know, we're the biggest gang around, and all these little punk gangs around us over here, they're not going to jump out and try to threaten you as you go through, because my people will be with you. But there's a problem that comes with that. What happens whenever, because I think at this particular time that he did not intend to go live with his brother. Jacob or Israel is an independent man. He's going to live where he feels God leads him to live. And personally, I wouldn't want to go live with my brother. If you live with somebody under that circumstances, then you are basically putting yourself under their authority, right? And he doesn't need to be under the authority of his brother. He's under the authority of God. He sees that God has led him all the way through this. In fact, we look back up there, it says, I see in your face as if the face of God that he has led me to this. His eyes are opening exactly who God is and what God is doing. And it wouldn't be good for him to put himself back under the yoke of another taskmaster the way it was with Laman, would it?
He's had
20 years of somebody telling him what to do. Now, if he had went to Esau's place, I'm sure God would have dealt with that, but he was smart enough not to do that. So he said, what needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. He's like, I don't need it. Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day to Seir. In other words, okay, he argued with his brother. They said, hey, let me escort you. No. If you do that, my women and my children will be dying. Either that or you have to move too slow. It's just not going to be good. Well, let me leave some people with you. No. We can handle it. Look, we've moved all the way. I can just hear it. Look at all the time. Look how far I've come already, and I didn't need your guard already, right? So we can make it. We got that. So at that particular time, they separated themselves, and Esau returned to Seir. But I do believe that they had met. They'll meet at other times, and at least you have this family that's not torn apart anymore, do you? Now, Esau will never be part of Israel, but they're still the same family. And it's interesting, if you look back at some of the tribes over in the Mideast right now, how they take and count their lineage all the way back to Abraham. Truly, a lot of these tribes, if they look at their lineage back, they're related by bloodline. We know if we go back to Adam and Eve or go back to Noah, we're all related. But still, they can, even in a short period of time, they can relate themselves back to Abraham through Esau's line. So Esau returned to Seir, on his way to Seir. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him a house and made booth for his cattle. Therefore, the name was called Succoth. Let me see if it says anything about this word, Succoth. Shelters or booths. So basically, he went to this area. He made him a house. He made a bunch of pens for all his animals, made shelter and everything right there. And he named it there. So he didn't go all the way up. Okay, and then it said, so that a period of time has happened because he had made shelters in this area, and it takes a little time to build, don't it? So we got to realize that time is passing in here. We can't say that he just went there and all of a sudden he just moved on. There's time going on in these particular things. People are growing up. People are getting older. Yeah. And Jacob came to it goes on to say, and Jacob came to Shechem, the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan-Aram and pitched his tent before the city. He bought a parcel of field where he spread his tent in the at the hand of the children, Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Now, when it says 100 pieces of money, the scholars take and debate over exactly what that means, but he paid money and he bought a certain field right there for a possession, right? And he erected an altar and he called it Elohai Israel. And that means, if I'm not mistaken, God, God of Israel. You see. Now, before, did he consider God to be a God of, when he says God of Israel, what do you think of? Who is Israel? When we think of Israel, what do we think of? We think of a nation, right? When he says God, God of Israel right here, what is he saying? Is he talking about a nation? He's talking about himself. He says, he puts an altar up there and he says, God, God of mine. Before, when he built an altar, who did he say God to? Who was it when he built altars before? Come on now, folks. Who were they to? The God of who? The God of who? Isaac. You see how he's moved and he's embraced exactly who God was. God has showed him over the last 20 or possibly 20 years, 40 years, whatever. God has shown him and moved him as he's moved. He took and he deceived his brother and he stole his birthright and he stole his blessing and he got chased out and he went over here to Laman and Laman messed with him the whole time and he had bad dealings with Laman. And now he's come back across and God has showed him how God has worked through all the bad things that have happened to him and has worked toward the good. And now he has embraced exactly who this God is because before it wasn't internalized. It's like, have you ever seen a child grow up in a godly household? Does that make, whenever you bring your child up in a godly household, does that make that person a child of God? Simply because he grew up in a godly household? Did Jacob grow up in a godly household? He grew up surrounded by people that worshiped the true God. But that, it took time for him to accept who God is. And we have people that take and they grow up in godly households and simply because I grow up in a Baptist, I'm a Baptist, right? My mom and daddy were Baptist, so that makes me Baptist. My mom and daddy were Catholic, so that makes me Catholic. My mommy and daddy were Presbyterian, that makes me Presbyterian. That makes me a part of it. Is that true? If your mommy and daddy are truly members of the family of God, you have to accept that. You have to internalize that. It has to become personal. And you have to accept it personally, the relationship with God. Simply because, does that make it easier? Do you have more information when you're growing up in a godly family? Yes. Do you have benefits to you when you grow up in a godly upbringing? Yes. But that doesn't guarantee you're a godly person. Did Esau grow up in the same godly family that Jacob did? But he took a total different path, did he not? We see the transformation of Jacob to Israel in this particular thing. And we see a man coming to accept who God is and how God was using him. And we see a man turning from a knower to a believer. And that's what we want to see growth in our own families, in our own country, and all in this world, right? We see people out there that know who God is. It's hard not to know who Jesus Christ is. We tell you about him every time we see him, or we should. There's very few people out there in this day and age of the internet and all the information that we have that's going to be able to stand in front of God and say, I did not know, I never heard about who Jesus Christ was. There's very few people over there whenever they meet him and going to be able to say that to him at the judgment seat. But they, how many of those are going to be said that have took the next step to believe? And I think you see Jacob turning into a belief right here. And that's my personal feeling that if y'all have anything different, well, that's that y'all can deal with that. But that's what I see here. Anybody got anything else there? Have I beat that horse to death? Okay. Okay. Now we go on. It's been some years now because Dinah's done grown up a little bit. She's no longer a little girl. Now she's a young woman. Okay? And evidently she had some pretty good looks because she was a good looking young woman. And it says, now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, and understand that she was born last, right? She was the last child born to Leah. So she's very young at this particular time. Remember that her brothers are probably 20 years older than her. You know, so Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went to see the daughters of the land. So they had moved into this area. They moved into the area where Shechem is, right? And no. Go ahead.
That's over here where he pays for it. He had no business paying for it. This part of the Canaan was long for him anyway. Abraham bought a place to bury people.
You know what? I think that whenever he got to that place, Coach, that he wasn't in a position to battle for it. So sometimes, what is money to this man? This man's a rich man. If he can take and if he can give you some money and that I know that's saying this land is mine, why should he have to fight and spend blood for it? No, I'm just saying, why should you have to do that? So, in the true sense, God has given it to them. But let me ask you a question. This is something, I don't have time for this, but I really don't want to get too deep into the next. So let's look at the land that is over there right now. Is any land possessed that is part of Israel at this particular day possessed by non-Israelis? Should Israel go forth and forcibly take that land right now? Well, then, go ahead. If, okay, now I say it, but now, okay, so they did go to war to get Jerusalem back in 67, correct? Okay, so if they had the ability and they had the physical might at this particular day to go forth and physically kick people out of the land that is given to them by God, would it be right for them to do it? Would it would be right in God's eye. Well, would it be right?
No. God would have to do that. God provides for that. If you do so otherwise, it's to do it in the flesh.
You see where we get off into this thing of a thing. Go ahead, Coach. Go ahead.
Their problem is secure borders. They don't have.
Yes.
They don't have secure borders.
And they never will.
Well,
yeah, when the Lord Jesus comes to rule on earth, they'll have secure borders.
They don't have secure borders. I think that's the reason they signed the treaty.
Sounds good, don't it? Yeah. They don't have secure borders. And like I said, they're truly warned until the Lord comes to live on earth. I wouldn't. You know, I don't want to get into this is delving deeply into politics, and I don't really want to go into politics. But yeah, my point being is that I think that he was being led by God to do it at this particular way at this particular time, and we see later on, you know, he said that. Whenever, and it'll get more intriguing down in the bottom, whenever he chides his son, saying, you know what, you have made my face a blight on all this country because of your actions and what you did here.
Mm-hmm.
The retribution because of Dinah. What?
Why did he let his daughter go to town by herself?
Well, you know, if you, why did Jacob let her go to town by herself? I think anybody that raised kids sometimes understands that kids don't do what you want them to do or you tell them to do. I bet you that children are not much different than they are today. Yeah, don't do this. Okay, now, why are they telling me not to do this? It must be fun. It's amazing. And do we not even do that in our own life whenever God says, don't do this? And we take and we do what God doesn't want us to do, and it's called a sin, right? And how many of us can say that we don't do that as adults who know the grace of God? Good. David? Samson.
Samson.
He should. Mm-hmm.
But God was using that for the
film. Mm-hmm. We don't know the counsel of God, do we? You know, God used Pharaoh in his disobedience. God. Just because we don't see God using something in a certain way, that don't mean he's not doing it in that particular way. That don't mean there's, and just because, you know, God knows the ending from the beginning already. Again, I always say that foreknowledge does not indicate foreaction. Just because God knows something, that doesn't mean he calls something. God does not cause me to sin. It comes out of me. Because he knows I'm going to sin, he has already provided me a way out of that sin through the finished work of the cross, right? And he may use my sinful action in any particular time to use to better his position, which is all completely okay because he is God and I am not, correct? It's hard trying to get yourself wrapped around the mind of God. God gives us exactly a little bit of who he is. The reason why it's important for us to go through, why is it important for us to go through the Genesis? Is God says that he is the same. He never changes. He's always the same, right? If God says, I hate divorce in the Old Testament, but he allows divorce in the New Testament, does that mean he doesn't hate divorce anymore? No, he still hates divorce. He may allow it. Why? Because of our sinful natures and who we are. But that doesn't mean he wants it to happen, does it? God doesn't change. He's always the same. So when we look at God in the Old Testament, we look at God and we look at Jesus and we see this loving God, right? Is God only a loving God? A God that forgives everything? Based upon the works of the finished work of the cross? Is that all he is? No, God is also a vengeful God. God is also a God that wants what he wants. He has a right to his creation, does he not? He hasn't changed. He has a right to vengeance. It is his to judge. It's not ours to. The righteous judge. That's what I said whenever I talked to Craig years ago, and he's talking about at the final white throne judgment of God. And I asked him, I said, you know, I know some people, and they're not bad people. And, you know, I don't know what all they did to their life, but, you know, I look at them, and they're very gracious people. They help people out when they can. But they're not believers, and they just don't won't listen. I said, when you see good people that you've seen, and maybe you knew growing through life, and God pronounces them to go to hell, first off, he said, well, not only will we look at that and we won't think it's wrong, we'll be applauding to God's decision because every decision God makes is righteous. Why? Because God is always right. And then God come to later on, you know, that they, God doesn't send them to hell, they send themselves to hell by decision. You know, it's kind of like the guy, you know, the first time I had to fire somebody at work. It's a hard thing to fire somebody, especially 2 days before Christmas. I had to do that one time. But anyway, the first time I had to fire somebody, I went to my boss, and I'm now a new manager. I said, it's hard. It's hard for me to fire this guy. And he said, Terry, he's like, you didn't fire him. He fired himself. He said, Terry, you didn't fire him. He fired himself. You didn't do what he did to make him non-appreciative to the job environment that you were. He was required to do. He did that himself. You just pronounce the judgment over what he's going, whether he's going to work there or not. And then somebody asked me one time, it's like, was it hard firing somebody to a couple of days before Christmas? I'm like, when is a good time to lose your job? Anyway, but as going forward, like I said, I see. Coming forward, I see a movement. I see a broadening in Jacob, exactly who he is and the understanding. He has come at this, I think he has come under this, out of this particular point from somebody that grew up in a family of believers and now has moved the needle and now has become a believer in himself. And I think that's what that wrestling when he had with God with that night, when he would not let him go. And God reached down to him and said, you're no longer Jacob, now you're Israel. There was a movement that happened in who he was at that time. And then you see as he's going forward and he looks at his brother and he sees his brother come and he sees his brother hug him. He says, I look into your face and I see your face as if I see God's plan in your actions now, how I shouldn't have even been worried about how we were going to meet because God is protecting me all the way through and God has always protected him all the way through. Yes, sir. God hasn't protected him? Well, Coach, I would... Well, you know, and I would disagree with that because we do the same thing in this today. You know, we get ourselves messed around in junk that we shouldn't do. And that is to not do exactly, to see our failures and to see his failure that maybe you thought he didn't move far enough away from somebody else to get out, not embroiled in the auspices of what was going on there. We do the same thing. Does that mean that we're not chasing after God? No, that means we fall short just like this man does. And he is continually going to continue to grow. And God's going to continually show him and grow him up. Now, it's not growing him up in Christ because Christ isn't there. He doesn't know who Christ is. He is growing up in knowledge of God and he's got God wanting to do and how he follows God. He's looking toward God now. And this is the first time you've really seen him totally embrace who God is. And it's amazing. Like I said, it kind of looked to me like somebody that grew up in a household of believers. And you always just, the minute they make that profession of not only is this the God of my Father, I believe in him now. And I think we see that at this particular point. Now, does that mean that Jacob's perfect? But who is? Who is? None of us. Again, God uses imperfect people, flawed people, to do great things. Jacob was a deceiver. Samson was a womanizer. David was an adulteress and a murderer. Paul persecuted God's risen church on that particular day. And he went on to use every one of these people in a mighty way. What can God do to do with us if we allow him? And that's what we should be looking forward to. How can we allow God to use us more and more as we go through our lives? And that's kind of, I think that's where I'm going to stop this morning. Anybody got anything else? Okay, we'll jump into the whole Dinah thing next week, and it's a messed up situation. A lot of bad things happen there, and we see a lot of the problems that flow through families and stuff like that. So we'll jump all off into that next week. Mike, would you close this morning, sir?
Father, we come to you.